I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got no way to go. Got to catch my sugar, my plantation sugar, my plantation sugar, my plantation sugar. Ah, plantain, plantain, plantain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the soccer edition. I mean, you could see our beautiful faces, I think. I think that's new. That's fun.
I wasn't ready for that.
Yeah, so some of you can see that it's me, your host, Mitch. And with me, as always, is Mateus. Hi, Mateus. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well, man. Back after a week off, sort of.
Yeah. We had some scheduling issues last week. I will say that I was going to talk about this before we started MLS, but there's two things that I want to talk about from last week that we didn't get to talk about. And that was, one, I went to a Philadelphia Union game against Minnesota United. It was very, very fun. And Philly looked really good live. It was a really fun environment live. It's number two on my environment list in MLS that I've experienced so far. A distant two, though, because St. Louis was out of this fucking world. But a really, really fun time at the Union game. I got a free hat outside the stadium. You can see it right here if you're watching on YouTube, which is very exciting. And then the other thing is that the Rapids were sick as hell last week, and I wasn't able to watch, and that sucks. I had tickets to the game, and then I realized I was going to be out of town, and I changed the tickets that I was going to from a 3-2 exciting win against LAFC, where Jordy Mihaljevic scored two goals at the end of the game, to a game where it was a 0-0 all the way through until we got hit by a dagger by Houston. So terrible luck for me, but great from the Rapids.
Did you even get paid the Messi tax for swapping your tickets, or was it assumed that Messi wouldn't be playing?
Oh no, I swapped the LAFC one. The Messi one this week was in Miami, so I never had a chance to get those kind of tickets. Those are the two things I wanted to talk about from last week that we missed. Let's get into this episode by talking about the She Believes Cup, the greatest tournament name in the world. The final is happening right now as we're recording this. I have USA Canada on the screen right now. The semifinal for the tournament for the US. The US beat Japan 2-1. A little bit of an interesting start to the game, conceding in 30 seconds. Not exactly what we had drawn up, I imagine. But I think for the most part, the US looked really, really good in that game. And we're able to come from behind and win it. Jaden Shaw scored an absolute banger. And then Lindsey Horan won it on a penalty, which she seems to be scoring a lot of those, which can't complain. They made it to the final on their merit. What did you think from what you saw from the game, Mateus?
Yeah, I think as a team, a young roster, right? Like this is the first roster I think we can, I would say confidently say is trying to trend towards a new generation, giving Shaw a lot of time on the ball, and looking really competent, really fluid, really confident after the first minute goal, right? Didn't put their heads down against Japan, a really powerful team, a team that was really fun to watch in the last World Cup, right? And they just kind of stuck with it, didn't seem fazed by it at all. And granted, it's on home turf, there's a lot going in our direction, going for us. But I saw a team that looked fun to watch, wasn't the sort of hoofball tactically lame kind of stuff. It seemed like a team that was confident, having fun out there, and feeling a lot better after their W Gold Cup win, it seemed like. So I don't know, even Horan, I felt had a pretty good game, finishing chances or getting close to finishing chances. She had a nice shot. She glanced just part of the post, but she ripped the defender out of the way to get that one. It seemed fun. It seemed fun for the girls, and hoping to get this win now.
Yeah. One thing that concerned me a little bit from the game was I it was on during the Arsenal game, so I had like Arsenal game on my TV and U.S. Women's National Team on the laptop. But like every time I looked down, I felt like someone was down injured or something like that. And Naomi Garma got hurt. Thankfully, it wasn't serious because she's on the bench for this game. But like, it's always scary to see someone go down injured, especially on a turf field. That's always gonna be like just in the back of your mind, like, ah, shit. Like, I hope it's nothing serious. Thankfully, nothing crazy happened to any of our players during the game, but we did have to like make some injury subs during the game. I do want to talk about Jaden Shaw once again, because we did a lot of that during the W Gold Cup, of talking about Jaden Shaw and just like how great she was. But like, once again, she's 18 and or 19 and was probably the U.S.'s best player. I mean, when you score a goal like that, it's hard not to be. But absolutely phenomenal in that game. Like, I think she's basically locked down a spot for the national team, which is kind of crazy for someone at her age to do. What do you think? Like, and another thing is like where she plays, because with San Diego, she's often playing as more of an advanced midfielder. She's played almost as a striker for the national team. I think in this tournament, she's played a little bit more as a midfielder. But where do you think is probably her future with the national team?
I think for now, I think she's going to have to be a bit fluid in where she plays. I think further back in midfield is where I like her more. After, I mean, we're talking maybe a couple few, at least years in advance, but I think after Horan kind of relinquishes the armband, moves on sort of, I want her in that 10 role. I think she's the player that has the most sort of creativity on the national team. Like, I think Sophia Smith has lost a little bit of that creativity, unfortunately. I know we should play at the nine positions a little bit harder. But I think she's the player with the most vision, the most ambition to do something creative on the ball out of this new generation. And so putting her at the 10 spot makes the most sense to me, or at least like the eight, that's like going to be a little bit more attacking, advanced, creative with the ball. That's where I see her, right? I think there's really no wrong answer. She's so young, she can mold into whatever she wants to be really at this point. So yeah, I don't know. Mitch, what do you think? I don't know.
I guess I've watched her the most as an attacking, or as a like forward, like right, playing more as a striker or as a winger. But the fact that she's playing there for her club is always a good sign. I mean, flexibility is a great trait to have in an attacking player like Jaden Shaw. And the fact that she's able to score goals, whether she's starting at striker or she's starting as more of a midfielder for the national team, is, you know, a really good sign. And I think that we have a good team set up around her to be able to perform in either role. Another player who I thought was very impressive against Japan was Sam Coffey, who is once again starting against Canada. I think that these last two windows have been really, really, huge for her. I think she's at this point with how she's playing, she's not only probably a lock for the Olympics, bar any like unforeseen injuries or anything like that, but she's probably a starter for the U.S. in the Olympics at this point.
Oh, 100%. I don't think there's anybody that's claimed that sixth spot in any sort of way. Coffey's played, I would say, really well. I wouldn't say her form in and of itself makes her undroppable, but the competition kind of does.
For sure. I fully agree with that. There's not a lot of people that are like gunning for her spot. I mean, one of the people gunning for her spot, a lot of people don't want on the roster anymore. So, you know, that I think that makes it a little easier for Sam Coffey. And you know, is there anything else that you had from the Japan game that you wanted to talk about?
Not from Japan game. I want to ask, what do you think the final score is tonight?
Shit, I don't feel like I don't know the Canadian team well enough, because in my head, I feel like Japan is better than them. Granted, I know that Canada is more of like our rivals in CONCACAF than like Mexico is. But I'm going to go with a 2-0 win for the U.S. That's what I'll go with.
Everyone I know here in the, I'm looking at the Canada roster here from watching off top of the rib. Don't rip me. I know is Adriana Leone, Jordan Hedem, I know, and Christine Sinclair is obviously not playing, RIP. I'm going to go 3-0. We'll put a little classy second half in.
There is one more player I want to talk about, that I just remembered, because I'm watching the game, and that's Alex Morgan. Because we talked a lot about her during the Gold Cup, who she wasn't even supposed to be on the roster before Mia Fishel got hurt, played really well during the Gold Cup, and I think has gone from potentially on the outs on the national team to, I think she's just a starter again. Like I all of a sudden Alex Morgan is undroppable, again, and we'll see how that translates when Emma Hayes takes over. But at least under Twilla, she's been undroppable, which is crazy.
Yeah, I think Alex is a player. I think that's in contrast to, I think, a few women's national team players in the past that has aged really gracefully, has like found her role. She doesn't, you know, she's earned the starting job on merit, right? But I don't think she's like demanding it. I don't think she's like making a fuss about it or anything. The ego isn't like a factor in this. It's she's earned it through her play. And props to her for like taking, you know, being dropped or having new options tried out and coming back into the team and still performing her best and still being a really quality member, obviously. And providing something different too. It's something these girls don't have right now. Is for that sure. Sort of like big presence. So
yeah, and that attacking group is only getting murkier with like Kat Macario's fully back. She played against Japan, and Swanson is also back. She started against Japan. And so it's just a wealth of talent, which is a great place for the national team to be in. And hopefully we get that in the coaching department once Emma Hayes takes charge in the summer. But let's move on now. Other than I'm assuming we'll react when a goal happens or not in the next 30, 45 minutes.
You're going to have to tell me, Mitch, because I'm trying to get into my HBO Max login here on my computer and I can't figure the fuck out. So you're going to have to yell and I'll keep right, the commentary going.
You'll be like mid talking about Ryan Gauld and I'll just like scream Haran or something. All right. Well, no NWSL this week and no Emily this week. Emily is on a work trip, so that's why she's not joining us. But yeah, no NWSL because of the international break. I feel like there's too many international breaks in women's soccer. But let's talk about some MLS. We'll talk about the first game, a 7-goal thriller down in Austin, Texas. Austin won 4-3 against San Jose. What did you think, Mateus?
This is such a fake game. This is such a fake game. Austin counter-pressing, San Jose's possession-driven team with like Lucy Gonzalez, right? So it's all about, at the beginning of the game, San Jose just like holding the ball. Austin not really looking to do anything with it, not looking goal dangerous at all. We get a goal early from Paul Marie, the left back for San Jose. A lovely cross by Christian Espinoza, easy back post header. Paul Murray scores again with his right foot from the outside of the box like 2 minutes later. And like the Austin players look like they want to die. I've never seen a team so shell-shocked. I've never seen like heads and hands, like it, just like looking like they're getting relegated. And we don't even have relegation. They look like they're getting relegated at home. They're lucky as hell to have this goal back offside, like called offsides. I think it was a back pass that was like rendered offsides or like the goal was canceled out, whatever. So it's still 1-0. So they still have a chance in this game. But like if that goal stuck, I think Josh Wolf gets like fired. That's like how bad like the vibes were. Another goal called back from O'Brien, who had a really nice finish, and then he went to go celebrate with his baby from the crowd, and he plucks the baby from the crowd and like holding it up, and it gets called back offsides and like the flashing lights and everything. It's like this huge celebration. It's like, sorry boss, you didn't score that. And I think it's like the second week in a row we had a goal called back offside too. Not very fun. But lucky for Austin, they weren't really doing anything within the first half. To go in 1-0 down at the break, overall, like, could be a lot worse. They come back on the second half, and they get three of the more bullshit goals I've ever seen just straight up. They actually go 2-0 down via Ebobasi, who gets a ball in behind. It hits at Brad Stuver, gets deflected. He puts in the net. So it's 2-0 down. But then they get a penalty in like the corner of the box that wasn't really necessary at all from San Jose. Giroussi puts that home. They get a defensive mishap with Rodriguez, the San Jose center back, just like heads it to Obreon in front of the goal, which like passes it in. And then Guilherme Biru, a very young left back, I want to say, from Brazil, strikes one from outside the box, like off of like a just like a misplaced pass. And all of a sudden it's like 3-2 Austin. They haven't created anything. I think it's like probably like 0.3 x. Well, I take it back. 0.3 like XA, because like there was no assists involved in any of this. And so they're lucky it's not to be 2-0 up. Amal Pellegrino comes off for San Jose, has a nice finish to equal the score 3-3.
It was awesome. What? I love that Pellegrino finish. I think that might be like my favorite type of finish, other than like a wonder goal, obviously. But just like the opening the body up and like finishing it back post. Like that, like I just picture that's like the Henry goal against Leeds when he like comes back on loan. I love the opening up the body into the back post. It is one of my favorite finishes. And it was a wonderful one from Pellegrino to tie up that game.
And he almost did it like two more times, right? He was calling for the ball over and over again. That's what you get when you want a DP signing, right? This guy came in from like Norway or whatever, you know, he's the guy from Bodo Glimt, right? Props to him for coming into the game and like locking in like that. But the last minute, Giroussi gets a ball chested down for him from Giassi Zardes, I believe, and half volleys that thing into hell. 4-3 Austin, and the 100th minute of the game, all the green lights descend. The crowd goes crazy. We love it. Except for the fact that Austin really did not deserve to win 4-3. Austin does not deserve to be in this game at all. So Josh Wolf's draw is saved for another day, I guess. But a lucky win for San Jose or for Austin, and San Jose, I think, should be disappointed. But you can't beat yourself up too much after a result like that, especially the way it came. Very fluky 4-3 win for Austin.
You know, at the very least for San Jose, I think they can like be able to look at their performances so far this year, and at the very least, they've been fun. Like they've been exciting games that they've been involved in. Hasn't always been on their side in terms of result, but they've been at the very least a fun team to watch as a neutral. So I don't know how it is as a fan, but they're not showing a lot of control. Espinoza's had his moments. Like he had an assist for their first goal, I believe, right?
Yes.
And beautiful cross. I feel like he's playing better, but he's not like on the, like he was an MVP candidate earlier in last season. And he's nowhere near that right now. Granted, he's on a way worse team. I feel like San Jose has not totally gotten better, but we'll see how someone like Pellegrino is able to get into the team more. You know, he came off the bench. Once your DP starts starting, that's probably going to be better for San Jose. You know, it is, as a, if you're an Austin fan, to look at this like, oh, you didn't really deserve to win, but you did score 4 goals. That is not an easy thing to do. Like, even if they're like not great goals, it's not easy to score 4 goals.
I would talk about XG, but we all saw the Man City Real Madrid game earlier where it was like 3-3 with like 0.5 XG per each side. So it's soccer, man. Shit happens, I guess. But I think the vibes could have been so much worse. It took a lot of luck, and it took a lot of like small decisions. Like this could have gone sideways really badly. And so I think it's good to keep that in mind if you're an Austin fan, because like you don't want to stay, I guess you want to be optimistic, right? But I think don't delude yourself into thinking this is going to be a playoff team, or that Josh Wolf like deserves to stay in this job. You know what I mean? Because like there's still like some balm to be smoothed over with this team, but like I don't know, man. There needs to be a rebuild, and that core from 2 years ago that came out of the gate so fast isn't doing it anymore. So we'll see. We'll see how the season goes on.
I mean, Giroussi scored the winner, but last year was obviously a very down year from him. Not close to the heights that he was at when Austin was in like the Western Conference Final a couple years ago. And I mean, as any team in MLS will tell you, if you've DPs that are not performing like DPs, it's very hard to be a good MLS team. Zardes hasn't been fantastic for them. I believe he's a DP for them, right?
I want to say he's a TAM player, but he's occupying salary and he's not doing amazing, I would say.
That is 100% true. Like very fun win from Austin. You know, you love a 100th minute winner. Like it's good for the vibes at the very least. It's good for the vibes to win on a game like that.
For one day.
Yeah. Let's move on now to a team that knows underperforming DPs very well. My Colorado Rapids. my PIDs went on the road to Inter Miami. And Messi had to have a legacy game because he needed to score against the best team of all time. He did that. Congratulations, Messi. You are the GOAT. I admit it now that you've scored against the Rapids. But you aren't good enough to get 3 points, pal. You're not good enough for it.
Can't do it.
So none of the Barca boys started in this game. They did not respect us. you know what? Fair enough. but I think Colorado was really, really good, especially in the first half. Well, I mean, we do have to keep in mind that Miami without the Barca boys is probably the worst team in MLS. One of the worst tier rosters in MLS. Like they have some good play. Like, why am I blanking on their striker's name that they did have before Suarez?
Campana.
Campana's decent. They had a couple injuries, so they weren't playing. A couple other guys who've been impact players. But I thought Colorado looked really good. We started the game really effectively, which is what we should have done with these starting rosters that came out. Because obviously, our best 11 was on the field. Theirs was far from it. I think that it was a disaster class of a first half by the ref. It was not good whatsoever. I think the Rapids could have had like a pen, and Miami should have probably had a player like sent off. Neither were like even called as fouls, which is one of them was called as foul. I believe like the red card shout was called as a foul. But the potential pen was just like, no, that's not a foul. And it's like, yeah, it 100%. Oh, my God, Jaden Shaw. Oh, fuck. She rainbowed it over someone, or she like flicked it over someone right to her own feet. And just the Canadian goalkeeper got there like right in time to be able to stop her. But it would have been a fucking sick goal. It would have been so sick. Anyway, the Rapids. We went up 1-0, end of the half. Off of a Rafa Navarro penalty kick. The ref did get that one right. We deserved a penalty kick there. It was won by our other DP on the pitch, or another one of our DPs on the pitch, Kevin Cabral. And I want to talk about our two DPs that aren't Jordi Mihaljevic for a second. because I mentioned offhandedly at the beginning about the win against LAFC. That was Jordi Mihaljevic's like coming out game as a Colorado Rapid. He scored a sick free kick. He scored the winner at the end of the game. It was awesome. I have full faith that Jordi Mihaljevic will be a good MLS player and a good DP for the Colorado Rapids. I think he will be like worthy of like what we are paying him as a designated player. These other two, I don't know about that. Kevin Cabral has been with the team for longer. We traded for him the beginning of last season. This man is not a real soccer player. Well,
He's just a sunk cost. He's a sunk cost for you guys. Like, there's nothing. You're not going to get anything out of that ever. He's going to go straight, dead ass to USL after this.
Yeah, and he should, because he's not good. And I don't know how he scammed his way into a DP contract with two MLS teams. That's crazy. How did he convince the Galaxy and the Rapids to pay him like a designated player? Because he's young and French. What? Like he's not good. He won the penalty, but like literally anyone could have been in that position. It like wasn't. Oh, Kevin Cabral was so good, and that's why we won a penalty. Like he was the reason why we didn't score multiple goals in the first half, if anything. Because I just don't. I think he pauses a lot of attacks. He's fast but not good on the ball. So like We can't even break effectively with him. And it's just like the sooner that we can get him off the books and off of a DP contract, the better the Rapids will be, because you cannot be a good team in MLS with someone like Kevin Cabral taking it up a DP spot. It is just, it's brutal to watch. I think that Calvin Harris should be starting over him. But like, I think there's maybe a part of Chris Armas's mind is like, can we get something out of a DP? Like, I feel like we kind of need to try to get something out of a DP. I'm saying the word DP a lot during this, and I'm going to keep saying it because now I'm going to talk about Rafa Navarro. Hey,
pause.
What?
We got to ignore that on the show, but anyway, keep going.
Rafa Navarro, he scored this penalty. It was his second goal of the season, neither of which from open play. They're both penalties. He scored one in the RSL game as well. He is on loan right now with an option to buy for around $5 million. Up until we purchased Jordy this winter, our record signing was nowhere fucking near that. We got Jordy for around like $2 or $3 million. And right now, if we activate Rafa's buy option, it's going to be a by far record signing for the Colorado Rapids. He has scored zero open play goals for the Colorado Rapids. Maybe he scored one at the end of last year, but like, he's maybe one open play goal from a striker. And here's the thing. I like Rafa Navarro. I think that he is like a good all action striker, but he cannot score. And that is exactly what you need out of a DP striker in MLS. Like, you need someone like Hani Mukhtar or someone like Yakimakis, where they're going to score a lot of goals if you're going to spend this amount of money on a player.
You need, like, let's say a minimum 15 goals plus assists from a striker, minimum DP. And, like, I feel bad for Rafa Navarro because he's clearly, like, a talented guy. So his history, like, he put up a shit ton of goals in the Brazilian Serie B. Went to a big team in Palmeiras, like top of the table, and didn't do anything. Got like bench minutes, no goals in a season. And that's why he came to Colorado, to like rebuild this sort of goal scoring streak. And it's like not, I mean, he went to the wrong team for it, unfortunately, Mitch. But like this season, when you guys have a little bit more talent, it's his time to prove himself. And it's not, I'm not going to say he can't fix it by the end of the season, but like it's got to be more than PKs. It's got to be a header. I think is when he puts one in, you know, that feeling when you put one in, because it's been at this point, I think almost 3 years for him since he's had like a steady goal scoring run. That's gotta be a tough mental thing at this point. And I'm glad he's getting game time. I'm glad he's doing his thing in terms of like connecting and build up. And he's not like looking completely lost out there. I don't think I get that impression on if you do, Mitch, but, But no, it needs to be a big step up, and that's going to be something we talk about a lot for the rest of the season with Cabral and Navarro for you guys.
Yeah, I think the thing with Navarro is I think he's been effective, but not like what we need. Like, he is a competent soccer player at the very least. I cannot say that about Kevin Cabral. And his options up in the summer. So it's like end of June that I think his loan expires and his option becomes available. I, for the record, would not be against bringing him on as a permanent transfer, just not by activating his buy clause. Like, it would need to be negotiating a way lower fee with Palmeiras and not having him be a DP and not having him taking up a DP slot.
For the record, I think you can probably do that by now. Like, I think his performance has been shaky enough to where they're just like, if you guys want to keep him and you want to pay like a $3 million fee and have him as a TAM player, like, granted, the salary is like up to him, right? That's like him and his agent trying to figure shit out. But I don't know who's going to take him in Brazil and pay him the same money that he's making now. So wherever he goes next, unless he starts putting up numbers, he's going to take a pay cut. And Palmeiras doesn't have anything for him. They're busy winning titles. So
even $3 million is probably too much for what the Rapids can pay and should pay. Because then if we do bring him back on a transfer where he's not a DP and we're not spending a huge fee, we open up a DP slot. And I think you if you're the Rapids and you want like a real like vote of something, you go get like I feel like you gotta look at Europe, and you gotta look at like how guys like Hani Mukhtar and Yakimakis and Denny Bwanga have come to MLS and done really well. You can buy these kind of guys that are more fringe players in France, or for Yakimakis' case, he was playing for Celtic, and they can be really successful in MLS. So I think it's up to the Rapid scouting department to find that player, because you can't afford to miss on another DP, especially one as vital as striker. And so I think that's going to be like the biggest thing that is the hurdle between the Rapids being a decent team. Cause I think we're still an above average team. I've said from the beginning that I think we are a playoff team, and I stand by that, especially after this result that we'll fully get into after I'm done ranting about DPs. But like, if you want to be one of the best teams in MLS, you have to have that kind of bona fide star, and a goal scorer that is a bona fide star is how you win games. That's how you can win a game away to Miami and not just draw it. But that's enough for my rant about Cabral and Navarro. Second half starts, and Inter Miami does the video game thing where they lean forward and bring on all the Barca boys. Messi comes on, immediately scores. It's 1-1. And then they score right after that. It's 2-1. So not great. And then 90th minute, Cole Bassett equalizes.
He's inevitable.
Yeah. The Colorado kid gets it done once again. He's been playing a little bit in a deeper role since Connor Ronan got hurt. I think it's fit him pretty well. I think he's played well in that role next to Ollie LaRoz. I'm glad to see him getting forward on a counter and getting those kind of spaces in the top of 18 where he's able to take those kinds of shots. Cause as we saw in the winner against RSL, and we saw in this game, he can take and make those shots. And so the Rapids get a point away from home at Miami with Messi on the field for the in the second half. Like, this is not a realistic result that we could like talk about for the Rapids like last season. Like, if you told me last season, like, hey, the Rapids will get a point away to Miami, I'm like, yeah, bullshit. So this is growth. This is great. We've had a tough run. We're playing LAFC, Inter Miami, and we come away with that 4 points from that. That's huge. That's an awesome, awesome result for the Colorado Rapids. Who I have now talked about too much.
Real quick, before we move off of these two teams, Inter Miami, do you think they get it done in Monterrey? I don't know if you saw the business with Monterrey and them fighting the locker room, giving Messi shit. Okay. So Monterrey and Inter Miami are in the CONCACAF Champions League here. They played at home right for the first game. And there were some afters after the game. There was a red card during the middle game for David Ruiz. But they were Monterrey won 2-1 at in Miami. But there was some afters. There was someone called Leo Messi a dwarf. At some point, Messi tried to fight someone Monterrey coaches in the locker room. And this is the championship they want to win, right? Messi is like, I want to win CONCACAF Champions League, probably more than any other MLS team even like cares about this competition whatsoever. This is what they're here for. And so they're down 2-1. They got to go to Monterrey, but they didn't have Messi in the first leg because he's out with injury. He was just trying to scrap. I don't know. They got to go win in Mexico, but they're going to have all of the Barca boys.
Yeah. I mean, so, like, Suarez fully rested. He did not play. Oh no. Alyssa Nair, what are we doing? Alyssa Nair comes out of her box, misses the clearance, and then Canada has an open net. It's 1-0 Canada. That's not good. 39th minute. We don't love that. We don't love that at all.
To what? Unpick the bunker. Time for Jaden Shaw to unpick the bunker.
Yeah, 100%. We need that now. On Inter Miami, I think they can get done with all their stars available to them. Obviously, it's tough playing away in Mexico, but like, they should be able to get it done, right? Like, Brandon Vasquez is more powerful than Messi. Is that what we're saying?
I don't know if Brandon Vasquez is, but I think a roster where you're not limited by a cap might be, you know,
that,
But I know. If there's a team that can do it, if there's a player that can do it, it is that guy, that dwarf down in Miami. I don't know. I'm not gonna. I would not bet on this game. Let's put it that way. Don't succumb to peer pressure, kids. Do you want to move on here now to Nashville, Philadelphia? We can go for it.
Tell me about it.
Nashville won, Philadelphia 2 in Nashville. This is a weird one because Nashville is normally not very good. But they were doing their thing where they bypassed the midfield entirely because they don't have a midfield and just like play hoofball. And Philly tried to do something different in that, you know, Nashville is usually a very narrow team, very compact through the middle. They're looking to like hit Sam Sturridge and like rebound off of Hany Mukhtar. Great. So what Philly decides to do is play a 3-5-2 where you bottle up the middle of the field, don't let anything happen there, and just force everything wide. Philly don't play a 3-5-2. Philly play a 4-4-2 diamond. They've always played a 4-4-2 diamond. And so they look like a mess. And Nashville is able to press on the press and counter press throughout the half and get a lot of chances off of Sam Sturridge's head. Finally, one goes in the 42nd minute. I would say mildly shocking for Philadelphia. I know they've had a lot of injury trouble this season, but they should be doing better, right? You can't be down to Nashville at home, away, whatever. Nashville has been completely subdued for this entire season. But in the 60th minute, they put on Bedoya and Mbaizo for Kai Wagner and Jack Elliott. So it's Bedoya for Elliott specifically is a center midfielder for a center back swap. Going back in their 4-4-2, then it's kind of game over. They know once they're in their 4-4-2 diamond, they know where the pieces move. They know where everybody is. They can connect better. They have better recognition using their normal tactic. And a goal comes like 2 minutes later when they hit Quinn Sullivan. I believe it's Jose Martinez just plays a long ball up to Quinn Sullivan, who's playing the second striker role. And he just like fights for it, scraps for it, lays it off to Julian Carranza, who hits a really nice quick finish. And then the goal late 90th minute off of a scrappy sort of, I think it was like, it was a corner, but Gazdag's kind of like unmarked at the back post and it just like drops to him and he smashes it in past Panico. Not a lot of huge chances in this game, I would say. I would just like, it was that interesting dynamic of like Philadelphia trying something new. And you see it so often where coaches get like a little futzy and just like try and like out tactic their team. Jim Curtin didn't need to do that against Nashville. They didn't deserve that. I don't know what he was really thinking besides, you know, to make wholesale changes to a team like that or trying to like diversify their tactic or not. I get it. But sometimes you just got to go with what works. And what works is their 4-4-2 diamond with Jose Martinez at the bottom, at the base of the midfield, evidently. Nashville, that team stinks. Hany Mukhtar can't save them. Sam Sturridge, who wouldn't have a bad game at all, can't save them. That's another coach that needs to get fired is Gary Smith. Kind of the faster the better, I think. I don't know what the Nashville front office is thinking or if they're going to wait till the end of the season, but he's not staying there long if things keep going this way. Because the performances are from individual players are okay. I think Jacob Schaffelberg is growing into be like a really good player. Sam Sturridge hasn't been bad at all. But the midfield isn't really great. Their acquisitions, I didn't think were super great. Drew Yearwood, who I thought would be good coming in from New York Red Bulls, not it. And on the flip side, you know, talking about contracts, Julian Carranza is out of contract at the end of the season. That's bad. You need to re-sign him now to a long-term deal or sell him or do something to him because you can't lose a 23-year-old DP who bangs in goals, who creates goals too. He's not just a poacher. He's a link-up guy. He's someone that needs to be nailed down long-term. And so two front offices with a lot of decisions to make. But Philly takes this one, 2-1. I don't know. Mitch, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I mean, you mentioned, obviously, Philly's tactical change. I think it's interesting that they were the ones to make the change and not Nashville. Like, I feel like if you're Nashville, you know you're a worse team than Philadelphia, and you should probably be the one making a tactical change to adjust to your opponent and not the team that's better. And then the other thing is that I think that Philly were really, really effective at creating quality chances by switching the ball. They like they love to do it a lot. And if you watch the highlights, it's very apparent because every Philly chance comes from just like a huge switch from a fullback. And they're really good at winning second balls. They have a team with a lot of energy, so they're able to like win the ball back effectively, especially on those kinds of opportunities. And I think it was really interesting to watch in that shortened format where I'm seeing like Philly chance, Philly chance, Philly chance, and they're all coming from just like cross field crosses from like midfield. I mean, they did a good job of being able to break Nashville down. It took a little bit of luck in the 90th minute on that Gazdag goal, but really, really good win from Philly. You can't complain about it. Win on the road, even if Nashville isn't great.
Yeah, and you know, with your point, so like why Nashville didn't make a tactical change, I don't think Nashville's made a tactical change in like three seasons at this point.
That is a very good point. There's a reason we're talking about Gary Smith potentially being fired.
Yeah, like he just there's nothing there to change. There's, you know, I don't know. I think they have the horses, right? I think they're built in a very specific way. Like they don't have other than Schaffelberg, really. I don't know if they have like really great wingers or wide players on their roster, but I guess maybe Alex Mouille fits that bill a little bit. If you're playing like a wing back role, but like I think a roster, to me, a good roster needs to be built with some tactical flexibility in mind, right? Or at least in a proportionate amount of wide players to central players to defenders to whatever. It's not a great job, neither by Gary Smith as in a coaching role or the DOF functions of the club, right? I think the front office needs to do better, but whatever. Sure. Not my business.
Well, let's move on to another 2-1. El Tráfico happened this weekend, which is always a fun one. And I will reiterate this to the end of time that it is the best derby name in MLS. That's just so fun. I love it. This game started out, it was in LAFC Stadium. Sick TIFO from their fans. Sick picture of Denny Bouanga in front of said TIFO. And LAFC got it rolling early. Tim Tillman scored 3 minutes in. There was a lot of long shots in this game. Both teams were just ripping shots from the edge of the 18. And it was a lot of like back and forth like that. Galaxy equalized in the 28th. And then LAFC scored their second goal off of a crazy dive from Denny Bouanga to earn a penalty that was not called back by VAR. It was not a penalty at all. It was a terrible, terrible given penalty. But that's how LAFC got their second goal.
Rich, real quick, my understanding was that they got called over to the VAR to review the penalty and gave it anyway. I mean, I don't think I've seen that maybe like once. I think we talked about it last time and everyone was like, no, that's actually pretty normal. But like, that's one where I think it was like, that's crazy that you gave that. That's crazy that you kept like upheld it after the VAR called it back.
Yeah, 100%. Because it was a very, very clear dive. I don't even think it was like one of those things where it's like, oh, it was called on the field, so we're going to uphold it. Like you take a look at that and I don't even know if there's contact. It was a almost egregious dive by Denny Bouanga there. And I cannot believe it was given. I think that the Galaxy were hard done in this game. I think they deserved more than nothing than 0 points because I do think they played pretty well. I don't know if they created like super clear-cut chances. Like they're probably lucky that it was 2-1 final score because Denny Bouanga missed a sitter in the second half. You mentioned before we started recording, and I want to talk about this too, of like the direction of both of these teams. Because LAFC, they won the title a couple years ago. They were in the title game last year. The Galaxy were not good last year at all. And I think have rebuilt to make a pretty good roster. But what do you think? What's your insight on, what do you think about like the roster and how these teams are built to succeed this season and then maybe even longer term?
I mean, I think LAFC has just lost a lot of talent in the past couple of years and haven't replaced it really at all. Like, I don't, if you look, they don't, have they replaced Vela aging? No. Have they replaced Gareth Bale coming off the bench? No. Have they replaced Chicho Arango, who's like, was like an okay player for them, but has gone on to be huge at RSL? No. It's just a lot of players that are, that aged, and then they try to be smart about replacing them with younger guys. You know, Bogush, Stipe Buick, others that just, they haven't hit. Right, they tried to get all cute and buy like players in the age 19 to 22 range, and it hasn't worked out for them, right? And those are higher risk buys, but you gotta hit on them. You gotta, like, at your LAFC, you have the pulling power to bring in a Giroud this summer, right? Who, by the way, with two DP slots missing, like, you talk about the Rapids missing on DPs, you gotta have them. Right, that's the first step, is getting them, and LAFC has the resources, the pulling power, to bring in a Giroud. They can certainly bring in someone from Ligue 1 or Serie A who's in their prime. You know, maybe a lesser name. That's how Wong had showed up to the team. Right, he came in from Ligue 1, and so you gotta try and hit your home runs for DPs. Worry, use the TAM contracts, use the under 22 initiative. To like take your swings, like, fair enough, but don't be leaning on these guys for 10 plus goals and assists, because you're not going to get that consistently. On the flip side, LA Galaxy, whole new front office, whole new lease on life. I think I'm pretty sure Will Klein came in, who's their GM, came in from LAFC, and bringing in Joseph Pansel has been really good. Bringing in the Japanese guys, Yamane, and I believe Yoshida. I don't know, did he start this game as well? Yoshida at center back.
I'm not sure.
Regardless, like, more depth, more quality depth, better scouting, better connection with the fans as well. I believe they brought in 100 or at least a few hundred fans on behalf of the club. So just like rebuilding, like fresh start, turning over a new leaf. And like not trying to be like the same old Galaxy that with a dysfunctional front office and leaning on Guillermo Barros-Schelotto to coach what was a mess of a manager. I think on LAFC's part, a little bit more ambition required, and I think they'll get that in the summer window. But Galaxy, it's good to see a team, a big club, right? I know MLS, salary cap and all, but a big club, you'd have to say, get back on track. And I think be really, even if they're not challenging it for anything in the West, like, that's a respectable squad, and the squad is clearly going in the right direction.
For sure. And I mean, it's early in the season. We're going to get full into the roster at the end of the episode, or sorry, the roster, the standings at the end of the episode. But they're second in the West. Like, they've had a very, very good start to the season. I think they've hit on a lot of their big signings. Joseph Pansel in particular has been super impressive to me. I've really, really liked watching him. He's been a player that has linked the ball really well as a striker, but has also scored a lot, and been really good.
And how about Jovalić too, right?
I meant Jovalić when I said Pansel. Pansel's also been good, but I was talking about Jovalić when I just said.
Yeah, like a guy I don't think I expected a ton out of the beginning of the season, or at least like maybe a little bit more than before, because he was kind of doing the Navarro thing where he got into good spaces and interacted well, but wasn't scoring. And all of a sudden, he was, you know, in the golden boot race for a few weeks, right, really quickly at the beginning of the season. And Pansel running rampant down the right side. There's a lot of good ingredients here. And yeah. I don't expect them to be losing El Traficos for long unless, you know, LAFC can turn the ship around in a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure. And it's got to be a good vote of confidence for someone like Ricky Puig, who, comes from Barcelona at a younger age, and is the best player on his team and doesn't really have a lot of players around him doing very well, especially last season. You know, you build a team where you have all of a sudden these really, really talented attacking players with him. And this is a good team. Like, I could totally see the LA Galaxy making a playoff run. They are really, really good and well set up for it. And that is not what I was thinking at the beginning of the offseason. Let's move on now to the team who's top of the West right now, Vancouver. They beat Toronto 4-0. And this struck me as a very mature performance from Vancouver. What did you think?
Yeah, this was interesting because Vancouver, it was immediately apparent that they were going to press Toronto, which is not what they do, right? We talked about 2 weeks ago how they're accustomed to hanging back and then just hitting long balls and getting three guys running after them, right? But like hanging back and ignoring, kind of setting up a lowish block with seven or eight guys. Vanny Sartini just basically said, Toronto ain't shit. We're going to press the hell out of them because they don't have the talent to play out the back. They're all young. And Herdman is a bitch. And he was right. It did help that Brian White got a goal in the fifth minute off a breakaway, really tidy finish. But it was just kind of smothering a Toronto team that was not ready for it. Not ready for that kind of energy, not ready for that kind of ambition, not ready for that kind of, I think, say chemistry between these Vancouver players. I think more than anything else, Vanny Sartini has brought that to the team. So like I said, Brian White goal from a break really early in the game. Fafa Pico scores from a corner, I believe, or it was resulting from a dead ball situation. It was a kind of a congested looping cross into the back post, and he just hammers it in amongst the sea of Toronto players, just kind of standing there doing nothing. And at 2-0, Toronto didn't have the horses, even with Insigne. I don't think Insigne was playing this game, but Bernadeschi was on. There wasn't enough energy. There wasn't enough ambition. They're away at Vancouver to get back in this game. It was kind of just dead for a long time. Then Ryan Gold scores late in the 81st minute off of a situation where there was no one defending after a dead ball. He completely ran free, tucks one home, and Veselinovic scores one off of a messy corner where it loops over Sean Johnson's head and hits it the back post at a weird angle.
That looked like a sick, like, back heel flick for the, like, when I initially watched the goal, it looked like the guy on the back post, like, flicks it with the back of his boot. But then you watch the replay and it's actually the looping header that makes it go in because it just hits the post. But I wrote down, I'm like, sick finish on the fourth goal. And then I saw the replay and was like, oh, never mind. And it was just like a looping thing that just kind of worked out.
Well, it was funny too, because like the body language from the Toronto players, like that loot, like last minute of the game, you're getting smoked. You're getting smoked away. And then this like poorly defended corner, it like kind of like loops up, hits the back post, but it hits the back post like not at the top corner or anything. It hits the back post like mid thigh height and goes in. Mm-hmm. And then I saw Veselinovic's defender. I'm not sure who it was. Might have been Spicer. Just turns around and just goes like he's just like, what the fuck else could happen this game? Like we got smoked, dude. And it's just this Toronto team, they started the season not great, but better than we all expected, right? I think Insigne and Bernadeschi seemed to have healed whatever rift they had. It seemed like the vibes were better with Herdman and the team, but they're just not talented. They haven't produced anything from the academy or kept the talent they have produced at the academy. They haven't bought young players at all. They're really a mess in a big way. And I don't think Herdman's going to be the guy to fix it. Maybe he's the guy to paper over it for a season and a half and be like the hey-ho vibes guy. This is a pretty ugly performance, I'd say, from Toronto, because they were not able to adjust to the press in any sort of way. And it was disappointing. I would say even with the low bar, they went pretty far under that low bar, I'd say.
I honestly think you're maybe being a little harsh on Toronto. and as much as I'd like them to implode again because it was funny, like it was very entertaining for me last season watching them implode, I do feel like they're a significantly better team, especially with Insigne and Bernadeschi more engaged. And I don't think you're giving John Herdman enough credit. I think he's done a good job. Like that in itself is an achievement to get both of them engaged again. And if you have those two players playing well, which obviously they did not against Vancouver, I think it's a recipe for more success from Toronto. I don't know if they're like a lock for playoffs or anything, but I also don't think they're going to be like the worst team in MLS like they were last year.
Well, I think they will be the worst team in MLS. I don't think it's John Herdman's fault. Like, let me be clear. I don't think John Herdman's a terrible coach. I don't think he's a great coach, but I don't think there's anything you can do with this roster, because outside of, like, I'm looking at the 11 here that started, Bernadeschi, obviously, and Sydney didn't play this game. They just brought staff in. Kerr is a good player at striker, but everybody else in this team is just not an MLS player. Or certainly not at this point. Maybe there's a couple kids that can start and deliver, but I think it's just the roster that's really weak. It's weaker than like Colorado's by a lot at this point. Who else is at the bottom of the table? When we go to do the table analysis, we can take a look. But I think it's just a really – Herdman doesn't have a lot to work with. And he's used to not having a lot to work with Canada, right? A roster that I think is athletically really talented, but outside of Alphonso Davies and a few strikers, there's not a lot going on in midfield. So he's kind of used to lacking that technical quality and getting something out of it. But it's one thing to do it on the international scene or in a cup competition, but over a league season – getting results of players that aren't up to snuff technically is tough, is really, really tough. So I will commend John Herdman if he's able to keep the job after this year. I'll say that.
I think, like, right now, Toronto's sitting in seventh. Obviously, we're seven games in. The teams below them, I feel like they are on paper, or at least just like how they've played, better than a lot of these teams. Like, DC, I wouldn't say is outstandingly better. Charlotte, Chicago, Montreal, Nashville, New York City, New England, I would not say are like better rosters or like inherently better teams than Toronto can be, and that we've like seen from them this year under John Herdman. On the flip side, I think that this performance comes more from Vancouver is really good now. I think that they were a team year that like they were a good team last year. They made the playoffs. They had a run. But I saw so much immaturity from them in terms of finishing. And I feel like both their two talismen, Ryan Gauld and Brian White, are both finishing at a high level this season and taking their chances at a high level. And that's how you win games 4-0. The Vancouver of last season maybe wins this game 2-1 or something like that, where they're kind of scraping by as opposed to absolutely demolishing a rival team. So I want to give more credit to Vancouver than I want to shit on Toronto when it comes to this result, I think.
I'm with you. Where I lose you is where you think rosters are better than the Toronto roster is equal to others, because boy, I do not think so, my guy. But I digress. Yeah. I digress. We can move on to your last game, I believe.
All right, cool. We'll move on to the last game of two very unserious teams. Sporting Kansas City and Portland Timbers drew 3-3 in what is just a dog shit 3-3. Like, SKC.
I watched this game live. I was watching the first half of this game live, and I was like, when halftime hit, I'm like, boy. This is a really low. Let me turn this off. I had no idea this going on to finish, but you go ahead.
See, like, I saw this game was happening, didn't turn it on, and SKC was already up 2-0, and I was like, well, I'm just not going to turn it on then. And then this ends up being a 3-3, and I'm like, well, fuck, I wish I watched this live. So SKC has a crazy finish to go up 1-0. Great start from them. Then they score from a corner in the 38th minute, and then in first half stoppage time, they go up 3-0. They are fucking cruising. Like, they're
cruising.
So good.
From the first half, I thought, I want to shout out Rosero, the center back, had an amazing first half. Like, really good goal in the 38th minute, but also just like sensational defensive actions all the time.
I don't think he was as good in the second half. Because in the second half, everything kind of starts imploding for Kansas City. They are at home. They're up 3-0 at home. And so they get a penalty. They have the chance to make it a 4-0 and truly put a nail in the coffin. And they miss the pen. and then the momentum just fucking swings. Then Portland gets a pen. Evander scores it. So now it's 3-1. And then the 65th minute, Portland scores. It's 3-2. And then in the 80th minute, comeback complete, 3-3. One player for Portland's really impressed me this season has been Antony. I think that Manchester United needs to like have a prisoner swap or something because he's better than their guy of the same name. But it was a very scrappy 3-3 from Portland. But I'm willing to give Portland more benefit of the doubt because they're playing on the road and they're the team that came back for a 3-3 as opposed to choked into a 3-3. Because choking from 3-0 up at home is fucking embarrassing and not what serious teams do. Sporting Kansas City, we were on your shit last year. That will not stop. We are both haters. You are not a serious football organization. Peter Vermees was like, "Oh, I'm gonna try to be the first coach to stop Messi. Good luck, pal. You couldn't stop fucking Phil Neville's team. Like that's not a great start, man."
And the thing is, like, as I'm looking through the subs and like the highlights that I watch, like, I didn't see any tactical changes. Like, I didn't see anything like shift. I don't think Timbers like made a big move that would like would have bamboozled SKC at all. Like, they just hustled. Yeah. Like, that's it. Like, they just like were down 3-0. And I think they already got yelled at the previous game, right? Timbers already have had so many ups and downs this season. And like Phil Neville has already given them so many tongue lashing and so much praise too. That they just like went out there and like, fuck it, we're gonna fight again, we're gonna scrap again and pull out three goals. Like I don't know what to think of Phil Neville anymore. Let me get this straight. Phil Neville's not a tactician. I don't think he's ever been a tactician. But can he be a good manager somewhere? Like, should maybe if he's getting guys like fighting for him this hard. I know, yeah. We've had the Phil Neville discussion on this show too many times, but
no, I'm for sure a Phil Neville hater, but if he's willing, if his teams are willing to fight for him 3-0 down, that's a very least a good sign of a decent man manager at the very least. Because yeah. I don't think a team is going to fight 3-0 down away from home. If they're not like, it's somewhat inspired by what you're saying in the locker room. Like the switch happened after halftime. It especially happened after the penalty miss. But, like, in general, just happened in the second half. Phil had to have said something to inspire the troops and got it going. A really good draw on the road from Portland. I don't think they're a great team. I don't think they're going to be, like, a top of MLS. But, like, at the very least, I think Phil Neville can maybe survive the season. I think that's a realistic expectation for them now.
And, like, he has the buy from the players. The front office, as we know, in Portland is a fucking mess and will probably always be a mess until that team is sold. But, like, to instill enough of a team culture from, like, one man alone, I'll give him, applause for that all day. All day. And I think Evander is a cool customer as a player, too. Consistent, always doing his job, can pull, like, the spectacular out of nowhere when needed. Like you said, Antony's been great to start the season, and Phil Neville even pinpointed him as a guy who might surprise at the beginning of the season. He's definitely done that. I think there's a lot, you know, with the arrival of Rodriguez as well. I think he moved out to the right in the second half of this game. I think he's a guy that's going to add a lot of talent just in general, even though, you know, maybe he plays up top, plays on the right wing, whatever. I think any sort of purchase in attacking firepower is good, especially a guy from Liga MX. It's like proven. So shout out to Cabecita, Rodriguez. I don't know. This is going to be an interesting team to follow throughout the season because they've got a lot going for them and they've got a hell of a lot against them too.
For sure.
And so it's one of the more unique, I think, stories this MLS season because it seems like every team, every game they've played has been absolutely fucking chaotic.
Yeah, 100%. Before we get out of here, I want to run through the top of the standings for both the East and the West and talk about that for a sec. Starting in the Eastern Conference, in a playoff spot, Charlotte FC, DC United, both in eighth and ninth. Toronto, which we've gone on about, are in seventh. Atlanta in sixth. Cincinnati in fifth. Columbus in fourth. Miami are in third. Philadelphia is in second. And the New York Red Bulls are on top of the East right now. I don't think that a lot of people expected that seven games in. Obviously, a lot can change. It's a long season. I think there's a lot of the teams up there where it's like, yeah, I would expect Miami, Columbus, and Cincinnati to still be up there. Let's go. Great goal. 1-1 US. Come on. Sophia Smith. Let's go. Is there any surprises for you, top of the Eastern Conference right now?
I think New York is a big surprise, but I think if you watch their games, they're playing a lot better possession soccer than they used to, right? It's not just the Red Bull sort of murder ball way. Like, they're trying to hold on to the ball more, and they've adapted to that. Frankie Amai has been really good at the base of the midfield. And they brought in, you know, Emil Forsberg and Lewis Morgan, two quality attackers. They're proven, or Lewis in MLS, Forsberg abroad. It makes sense that they got a lot better. I would say a surprise for me, honestly, is Atlanta United in a lot of ways, because I think they had some holes in the roster, or at least inconsistencies in the roster last season. And it seems like they're starting to patch that up and play better, more cohesive team soccer in a way that they kind of were leaning in on at the end of last season and were trying to fix things towards the end, the back end of the season. I think Atlanta, I would have pegged them to be around eighth or ninth. And I think the fact that they're closer to the top of the table, even though it's sixth on points, I'm leaning towards them continuing to climb. I'll say that.
Great. Let's look at the West real quick. In ninth, in a playoff spot, my Colorado Rapids, let's go. And I'm going to keep saying it. We're a playoff team. I believe it. I fully, fully believe it.
I believe you.
I'm thrilled that you do. I'm glad that I've convinced you to believe in the PIDs. Right above them is Austin, who you talked a lot of shit about. And then above them is SKC, who I talked a lot of shit about. And then the Houston Dynamo, LAFC. Minnesota United are in fourth, which news out of Minnesota United today. Reynoso is AWOL again. We don't know where he is. Yay! and then the top three are Fake Salt Lake, LA Galaxy, and Vancouver. Is there anything that stands out to you in the West?
The Dynamo hitting the reset button a bit, like they were so hot at the end of last season, right? But their Open Cup run as well. I think playing good soccer, but a little bit of a reset, a little bit of like a step back. Because the West is like just kind of weak, right? I kind of expected Dynamo to be higher up the table in terms of points, but I think their performances have been okay. I think the big surprise to me is honestly Vancouver being that high and Minnesota being that high without Reynoso at all. I think in terms of performances, Minnesota, I think you'd agree, is like been the big standout with their late goals, but getting production out of guys that I would have never expected from. Props to them.
Yeah, fully agree. All right, well, it's been another fun week of MLS. Hopefully the U.S. Women's National Team gets it done. But that's all for us this week. Tell the people peace, Mateus.
Peace.
I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got no way to go. Got to catch my sugar, my plantain sugar, my plantain sugar, my plantain sugar. Plantain.